Good morning. Welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the one, 95.1 FM. And, of course, for over 50 years, this is KYMN Radio 1080 on your AM dial right in the middle. It's time for the Wayne Eddy Affair on this, the 19th day of November. The year is 2018. This is a Monday. It's somewhat overcast, 23 degrees. And we're working our way towards Thanksgiving coming up this Thursday. And I have a lazy Mondays. Usually I talk about what happened over the weekend. I didn't do much of anything, but my wife Julie, representing the defeated Jesse James Day's committee, and Northfield took the ambassadors up to Cambridge, Minnesota, where they had a huge parade in cold, and they had lights on the float and lights on the girls and lights on the little ambassadors. It was a lot of fun, and it was wonderful that she could help promote again the community of Northfield and defeated Jesse James Day. So thanks to that group, the parents went up too. So thanks for doing that and talking up Northfield. Speaking about talking up Northfield, I'm going to talk to a gentleman that is familiar with Northfield. He's pretty relaxed right now. No earphones, no nothing. There you go. Roger Petty, part two on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Hi, Roger. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Wayne.
I just feel better when you wear earphones.
Yeah, it's a look and an image.
Yeah,
on the radio.
Yeah, done. And now, for those who missed the first interview, Roger is one of a whole bunch of siblings, like eight brothers and sisters.
Yes, oldest of eight.
Yeah, and he's also has his own business in downtown Faribault in the beautiful Fetty building that's been there for a long, long time.
Yes.
And your dad was Dick Fetty.
Yep.
Richard. And he is semi-retired but spends days down there.
Yep.
Fixing things, looking at things, et cetera. And it's good to have you back. We talked all about your going to school and all of the things that you did right up until I wanted to save talking about what it's like to be a sound man. Now, I know that you've done a lot of sound for local people, and you probably have done some sound for some people that were real big or really, really big. We're going to find out at 9:05 here on KYMN Radio. And, Roger, tell me how did you get started again, so folks know how you got started in doing what you're doing? And maybe, better yet, what do you do?
Well, I probably got started in it, you know, probably back in high school theater and stuff. That directed quite a bit of what I was doing. Just out of high school, started mixing. You know, back at that time, the big thing that everybody went to was, you know, the 50s bands in the ballrooms. There was ballrooms in every corner of every little county, and I worked with a lot of bands that played then, the Wanderers, the Revels, there's just a constant list of different bands that I'd worked with. And I sort of just started mixing sound in for groups on weekends and stuff. And as that progressed, pretty soon I decided to buy some equipment, and that turned into sort of a never-ending expansion. I would guess the late 80s I really got serious about saying, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to buy equipment, I'm going to start, you know, doing for owning my own equipment to go out and do events and shows and stuff. That's kind of how I got started in it. And then from there, it evolved into just nonstop expansion and people wanting me to do work for them and stuff. And the sound part of it is sort of the key part. However, I do lighting and I do video, and we do video recording, and we do lots of different aspects of it. I have a lot of clients that I do all three of them for. You know, they hire me to provide, you know, they do an event. It's a student event or it's something. More recently, you know, just some of the more events we've been doing, I know that around the state that these high school robotics is a huge thing. I know Northfield has a team, Faribault has a team, I think Kenyon, I mean, all the towns have a little, these high school engineering teams. And so, believe it or not, I'm the one that provides the lighting for those competitions up in Duluth, Minneapolis, Grand Forks, La Crosse, out in Wisconsin. We usually set up two to three trucks in the spring and send them out full of equipment. So we provide the lighting, the sound, video for that type of events. And I'm working with another vendor on that. I'm sort of a sub-vendor, although I'm a pretty big piece of it.
All right. Now, what year did you get out of Faribault High School as a Falcon?
77.
All right, 77. And I'm wondering what type of equipment was available in 77. How important was the transistor in 77?
Well, the equipment that was available in 77, well, part of the reason I became the tech was because I was the only one that could keep the stuff working, because the equipment wasn't very good back then. Actually, it was kind of junk. There was not, you know, live sound equipment was just evolving from the late 60s into the 70s. High-end amplifiers, powerful amplifiers, a lot of those companies literally started in the 70s. The mixing boards and stuff. I know at Faribault, the mixing board there was literally a Shure VocalMaster four-channel board. I got in trouble modifying it and tying two together so we could actually run eight microphones at once. And then they said, I can't modify school property. So then I was told not to do that anymore.
Well, did you do it anymore?
No, I didn't do it anymore.
Why wouldn't they want you to?
It's one of those things. Well, they didn't understand what I was doing, and the theater director at the time, Michael J. Hansen, wanted eight microphones, and you could only do four at a time. Well, I figured out a way to jumper them together and make it all work together.
Wow.
The equipment's evolved. You know, come into the 80s, stuff started coming out that worked okay. Being electronics and into sound like I was, I still was never really happy with it. But you had to do, you know, you had to use what you had. And it was, we did some pretty amazing shows in the 80s with the equipment that I had. And it was definitely an evolving time for those type of products. You know, fast forward to the 90s and the 2000s, and the last 15 years, the equipment has evolved phenomenally. I'm doing stuff now that you could have done back then.
Is it cheaper?
Well, not necessarily, but it might. You know, it's the good quality equipment's never cheap, but you can do 10 times more with the same dollar. You know, the equipment I'm buying now has 100 times more capabilities. Most of the stuff I'm doing now is all networked audio. We use mic cords on the mics to the preamps, and then after that it's all network based. So there's a lot of stuff that's greatly improved the last 5, 10, 15 years.
How about size and weight?
Size and weight's way down. In the 90s, in the 2000s, I bought a mixing console for the big concerts. It was 9.5 feet long, weighed 1,150 pounds. Took four guys to tip it up and get it up so you could pull the cover off and use it. And you couldn't, you know, it was monsters. And then you had racks tied to that with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of connections. And always at one point or time, one of those connections would not work. You know, the console I have now is about 80 pounds and has about four times the features of what that equipment did at that time. And it's only 3.5 feet wide.
And I have to tell you, you know, I've seen you or one of your crew people working at the entertainment center here, for example, or a smaller venue would be the ballroom. You set that up.
Yep.
But I often wonder when I see video of, let's say, an arranger or a personality and all that, and they have this huge board as big as from that wall to where you're seated.
Yep.
And I'm going, and then they have a ton of channels going down and all the way across, and I'm looking at that, and I said, nobody's that in tune to sound, are they? I mean, that just seems like a way overkill.
I think that you know, when you see producers with studio engineering boards like that doing, you know, recording music and stuff, they probably are not using the entire board, but in those cases, what they do is the key is they're trying to get every, you know, if it's, say it's a band with somebody singing or a group of singers, they're trying to get every piece of the music separate on tracks and isolated. So they'll have microphones in almost every position to be able to add the acoustic ambience to the music and stuff. I never got into live or into recording very much in the studio, and and it's not that it isn't a challenge, but live sound to me was the challenge of you only got one shot at it, and when it happened, and it was done, and so that I don't know. I think I always took that challenge a lot more. You know, I've done a little bit of studio work. Years ago, I helped a group. We were doing their live shows all over the country, traveling all over the country in a van with a trailer or a mini RV with a trailer behind it, and we'd do these shows, and they were having trouble capturing the liveness of that show in the studio. The studio would sort of dry it out. It would be real boring. And so I actually went in and helped them liven it up, saying, you know, add a little of this, do a little of this, you know, add some more mics, put some ambient mics in there, and stuff. So that was probably the extent of the studio recording I had done.
Why don't you explain what an ambient mic is?
Well, it's a microphone that's just adding the sound of the room. So if, you know, every room has a different sound into it. If you go into like a gymnasium, there's a lot of ambience. It's very noisy, very loud. Some rooms have some ambience, and a lot of rooms, like your studio here with the acoustical panels and stuff, and are designed to be, you know, pretty non-ambient or dry, so you don't get, reflections and reverb sounds and stuff into there. When you add an ambient mic into a studio, and they have rooms built that are more live and less live, you're trying to bring a little live back into it.
Isn't there a studio up in the Twin Cities area that is the quietest studio ever anywhere?
Well, there's some engineering facilities up there designed with what's called, you know, it's actually negative reflectivity. In other words, If you stand in that room, and if they turn the lights off, you fall over, because you actually, besides sight, you use audio or the reflections of noise to understand balance, and so these rooms are so negative quiet that when the lights go off, most people when they turn the lights on are laying on the floor because you don't understand, you can't keep your balance because there's no sound.
Well, you know what? That's pretty interesting because that happens to me. Because of the one leg thing.
Yep.
If I'm in total darkness, I have to feel the walls.
Right.
Otherwise, I'm not. I imagine you just said that it happens to everybody in total absolute quiet. But and a lot of blind people use echo to find out where they're at. That's pretty interesting that they do that.
Yeah, and the echo thing is pretty interesting. I can tell you, in the 60s, my father had a band called the Polka Dots, and it was Richard Fetty. Fritz Maschey was on Cordovox, I believe later in the band. Mert Hoover from over by Faribault. Augie Jacob was a drummer. But Fritz Maschey had come to Faribault because he was blind. And he had learned the snap method, and they actually in the 80s had done a story on this guy. He moved back up to Fertile, Minnesota. But when you would go up to his farm, he would walk around the farm showing you the farm, snapping his fingers. Because he would, that sound, he would hear it bounce off trees and tractors and buildings, and he would know where he was at on the farm if he got lost.
I think
it's a pretty, pretty interesting story there because it's just amazing that you know, if you've lost your sight, then sound was used like radar by him to be able to maneuver around the farm.
How cool is that, huh?
Yep.
And that's why people, when it's pitch dark out, walk kind of bow-legged.
Yep. And most of the time you're not in absolute black.
Yeah.
But if you're in absolute black, you actually can't balance yourself.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. I mean, yeah. Who thinks of that? 17 minutes after 9 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair, Roger Fetty, a sound guy in many ways. How about that? A sound guy in many ways.
I'm not sure that that could ever really be
100%. 100%. All right. Well, I'm going to talk about the QB for just a moment. The Quarterback Club, located on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield, invites you in for breakfast. They have 42 minutes to go, and their breakfast shuts down at 10 o'clock. Well, if you're standing in line, they'll take your orders, so don't worry about it too much. But once you turn in that order, whether it's a bowl of malted meal or whether it's a bacon and eggs and hash browns and soft-boiled, whatever you want, they've got it at the Quarterback Club. Locally owned, locally managed by Dale Finger and his crew, and always giving an opportunity for kids not only to learn to work, but also sponsoring many young adult kid teams, basketball, football, baseball. They do it all at the QB, the Quarterback Club. Roger Fetty is my guest on Kim, and one of the things he said to me when I invited him to come back, I said, well, let's just talk about what it's like to be on the road. And you mentioned that you graduated in 77.
Yep.
And was it after your high school graduation, or did you do the mixing and traveling before you got out of high school?
Well, the mixing and getting into all that was definitely after high school. There was a small it progressed more and more. I mean, I think the late 70s, early 80s, I did some of it, but then it got to be more and more and more. Late 80s, everybody's probably familiar with Ivan Willock, the woodcarver in Faribault, and Jivin' Ivan and the King of Swing, and he's. And then there's Doc Hildebrandt. There's a lot of artists in that group, you know, from back in the Over and Back days here at the Northfield Theater. I did all the runs of the Over and Back shows for a long time, 2-3 times a year. But he had a son, Mark Willock, that was in a band from Sioux Falls. And that's sort of, they were an original band playing the college events and stuff, you know, college shows. I started touring with those guys in it would have to have been about 87, and they were fairly successful, never became giant superstars, but we sure had a good time, and we traveled all over the country.
Well, that's what I wanted to hear, as much as you can tell about that. So you're around 28 years old
mm-hmm.
when you traveled with the band. Were you a married man at the time?
For a short time.
Okay. So at 28 years old, I mean, a lot of people are done having all that fun, but you got to keep on going. What was the name of the band?
That particular band was called Children.
Children.
Yeah.
And they were out of Sioux Falls?
They were based out of Sioux Falls. They were, believe it or not, there was two brothers and two cousins and one oddball guy.
Okay.
So it was some
children of aunts and uncles.
Yep.
Okay. And so where were some of the places that you remember? And you can be in detail where it was located,
oh,
how
sure.
you got there and
oh,
all
yeah.
that.
Well, when we first started, I had a trailer and would haul equipment to sites for them, and we'd set it up, and they'd do their shows. And then pretty soon they bought an RV, and then the RV could pull the trailer. And so I would drive down to Sioux Falls, and the trailer would hook onto their RV, and we would go somewhere. You know, we'd go to Brookings, or we'd go a lot of stuff east. We'd drive out east to colleges in the mountains and along we even went into Manhattan a few times, which
wow.
was pretty interesting
yeah.
stories. Well, we had a lead singer that would never listen to us.
What does that mean?
Well, lead singer is always, you know. The lead singer.
Oh, well, the front man.
The front man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that sometimes they make the band.
Yeah, they make the band.
I mean,
but a funny incident, and I shouldn't say funny, it was before 9/11, so it was, well, it probably would have been, he wanted to drive the RV and the trailer through the tunnels. But of course, on RVs and trailers, you know, there's the little gas can, you know, and the stove in the RV and all that, and they don't allow that. But he thought he could talk his way through, and that didn't work out so well.
So
we got turned around and sent over the bridge.
Okay. And now, when you went out to, how did they ever record anything? The Children?
Oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah, they recorded a number of EPs, and they recorded a tape One of their recordings they actually did here in Northfield.
Really?
Believe it or not. It was recorded with Steve McKinstry.
Up on 4th and Washington.
4th and Washington, yeah. Back.
Yeah. And Todd Thompson was in that.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Yeah, it was. I think that was recorded probably around, you know, the years aren't for sure, but I think that was probably around 1989, 1990, they recorded that there. And it was that, I actually have some cassettes of that, because that's what it was back then, was cassettes. CDs
yeah.
had just started to evolve in pretty heavy.
83 is when I think St. Olaf, WCAL, started playing CDs. Because mm-hmm. I thought a CD was a certificate of deposit.
Yeah, right.
I really did. What the heck is that? But that studio that did that, I think our friend that does the musical here in Northfield, mm-hmm. the arranger, the big man.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about?
Which one?
I'm talking about Craig Wozner.
Craig Wozner.
Yeah. And
he's the musical mastermind, genius keyboard player.
Yeah, and he was with them, and they did some jingles for KYMN Radio and some of our clients. So.
Yeah, Craig's got a studio out at his place.
Yeah.
No.
And I just talking to a guy that just cut a tape or cut, what do you say, cut a tape, cut a number,
laid down tracks,
yeah. Scott Richardson used autotone and backed up Craig with Yippee-yay.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's funny.
He wanted me to play it today, but I don't know. I might.
Wait, we'll see.
Yeah, 25 minutes after 9 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN, Roger Fetty is my guest. And Roger, tell us in detail what it was like to go out on the road with children. Is that your first touring experience?
That was kind of the first group I had toured with and done some touring with and stuff, and, you know, long-distance shows. You know, it was always interesting. You're all stuck in an RV driving for a day to go somewhere. We played so many colleges and so many places that it sort of blurred together. I can tell you that, you know, like we played the college in the Bronx. Went into the Bronx, played a show there. From there, we were going up to Albany, New York to do a show like the next night. So it was an overnight drive because it was a long ways. And if you want detail, I can tell you about that story. And most people don't believe it's true.
But this
is actually what happened.
Well, I want to hear.
So we had a rule that always two people were driving. One person would drive, one person would be co-pilot, just for, especially having the nighttime
safety,
driving.
Yeah.
Safety and stuff. Just two people always were up driving.
Well, first of all, how many were in the RV?
It was a five-piece band plus me, so there were six.
Well, it's a little cramped.
Yeah, that was understatement.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that big of an RV.
Okay.
But so I was co-piloting. Mark Willack was driving. I think we had drove probably, a half hour, 60, 80 miles up the Jersey Turnpike going to Albany. And we seen a couple of people hitchhiking, so we stop and pick them up. And we tell them, while the band's sleeping, you got to be really quiet. You just got to sit in the wheel well there, and that's fine. You know, so we didn't think anything about it. So we drive another 10 or 20 miles, and we're just driving, and we had stopped, and just before we'd picked those guys up, we had got stopped and got some beverages and stuff, and, you know, and just started driving again, picked those guys up. So we're sitting there driving along. And this RV's, you know, we're talking a 70s RV because it was 10 years old when they bought it. You know, it wasn't, number one, it wasn't very fuel efficient at all. So, you know, we had to stop all the time to put gas in the thing. And we were pulling my trailer, too, so it wasn't very fast. You know, so you could go 55 probably. So we're going up and down the hills on this Albany turnpike going up to Albany, and pretty soon, you know, Mark thinks, well, let's turn the flashers on because we're really slowing down on the uphills. And so we turn the flashers on. Well, probably, you know, 5, 10, 20 minutes after that, the dash catches fire. Like, no, the dash caught fire. Like, I'm smelling stuff, and I look at Mark, and Mark's going, what's this? And all of a sudden, flames started coming out of the vents. And we're like, oh, this is not good. So we pull over. We tell everybody to get out of the RV because it's burning. And so, and Corey is over in Sioux Falls, so he'll never hear this. This is good. This is going to be a good part of this. I think, well, I don't think he will, unless somebody tells him. Corey was the lead singer. So we're yelling for him to get out of the RV. So they're jumping out of the RV. And these two guys we had picked up were standing outside the door going, oh, so you guys are the band, huh? You know, oh, nice to meet you. You're the band. And the band was sleeping when we picked them up. So they had no idea who these two guys were. And then we get out of the van. I get out of the van. I'm thinking, okay, we're in the middle of nowhere with an RV that's about ready to erupt into flames. I'm not going to be stuck out here. So I dove back in the RV. I grabbed a big bottle of apple juice I had, and I started banging it on the dash. And so somebody else says, oh, Roger needs more stuff to put out the fire. So they go back in the RV, and they start throwing cans at me and hit me in the back of the head. And I'm like, no, stop. I says, I've got it out. You know, don't throw more stuff up here, you know, because they're taking it out of the fridge and stuff. Yeah. So then they're all standing there. Well, now, in the meantime, while I'm banging this apple juice, it was actually apple juice, into the dash trying to put this fire out, I look out the window because the headlights were still on the RV shining up the highway, and there's this guy running up the highway holding a pillow around himself, naked. Well, it was the lead singer. He had just was, and we yelled, well, you don't need, you know, don't run up the highway. Where are you going, you know, Corey? And I about fell off the, you know, I was laughing so hard I didn't even hardly pay attention that the fire was still burning. So needless to say, we got the fire out. We took the dash apart. They were lucky to have me along, I'm pretty sure. I don't know that. And so I dig into the dash. Well, what we found out is that the flasher wire had shorted out and lit up a bunch of little, like, cardboard ducting and lit up some other wires. So we opened up the trailer and got my toolbox out, and I started cutting apart all these wires and splicing and sat there and taped them back together and got everything. And the oddest thing happened. So once we did that, and we started the RV and everything ran and all the lights worked, and we're like, oh, we got kind of lucky here. So we're going down the road, and
are the hitchhikers still with you?
Yeah, they're still with us. They're not. They can't. They're like, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, yeah, it shouldn't really be like this, but it is. So, and the funny thing about that whole deal was, is we get going down the highway, and a couple of the guys in the back said, hey, can you turn this stuff off? And I'm like, what stuff? Well, these lights. I'm like, oh, stuff started working that had never worked on the RV before.
Oh.
So they're like, so flip those switches off. And so we turned the lights off, and we made it to Albany. The hitchhikers, you know, we dropped them off at the truck stop before Albany and got into Albany. I didn't get to sleep because of this, and so we had to do another show. So I was up like 48 hours straight.
Life on the road.
And I smelled like burnt apple juice.
Yeah.
And it doesn't smell like apple pie. It was very, between that and the black soot from the burnt plastic, it was pretty.
What time of the year was that?
Oh, well, it was in the fall.
It wasn't like a snowstorm.
It wasn't in a blizzard or anything. Yeah. I can imagine that would have really been interesting, but it was usually most of those tours we did were in the fall.
All right, we're going to take a brief break. Roger Petty is my guest this morning, and I asked him to come in and tell us some stories about his experiences on the road. That was an experience with a group called The Children. And did The Children ever appear in Northfield for St. Olaf or Carleton that you know of?
No. They played Mankato State, a couple colleges up in Minneapolis, Duluth. We were up in, I believe, Moorhead.
Were they a cover band?
No, they were all original. They were cutting edge alternative before alternative came out.
Oh, okay.
And so they actually got pretty, you know, we were getting flown out to New York nights in New York and a lot of stuff like that quite often.
Did you, are they in today's world? Could you YouTube them?
You know what? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Todd Bornhauser, president of the Northfield Area Chamber of Commerce. But many of you know me as the reindeer from Winter Walk. I would like to thank Northfield for being a community that supports each other and its small businesses. This Saturday, November 24th, is Small Business Saturday. Please visit and support your local businesses as you start your holiday shopping season, as they have so many great and unique things to offer. And remember, be local, shop local, and support our great community.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair, 932 on 1080 Radio. And we are talking with Roger Fetty. He has his own
production company.
Thank you very much. All right. So, what are you mentioned a couple of names that I like, Doc and Craig.
Yep.
And,
yep.
But what other Faribault or Northfield or Kenyon or Morristown or Dundas? You do any work in those areas, all of those communities?
I think I've done events in just about every one of them at some point in time. Pretty much all the regional musicians around here know me, and so, you know, between all the different events I do all over, I run into them all the time. You know, as far as, you know, other things I've done on the road, I've traveled nationally with a couple of different, you know, like, you know, conferences and stuff. Worked with a lot of musicians that way. I also have a lot of work down in Rochester, do a lot of work down there, do all their Riverside concert and winter concert series. And so that's been, and I've done that for, we've been trying to figure that out. It's like 19, 20 years now.
Did you ever work with Six Mile Grove?
Oh, yeah. Quite a few times. I worked with them when they were just barely out of high school, in fact.
So you've known them longer.
I've known them a long time.
Longer. They got something coming up. I just got something on my phone, but...
Yeah, they're not playing as much, but they're out there. They do. I actually worked with them recently on, I think, the autism event in Rochester.
Okay.
Because he's, one of them's down there in Rochester. And
Brandon.
Brandon is, yep.
Brandon Sampson.
Yep.
So you said something about, you're going to help me out here. Iowa's coming to mind, and, I know, almost... Barbershop Quartets. Remember you, if I recall, you were telling me after we were on the air.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Roger Fetty is my guest this morning, a sound guy. Now, you told me something I never even heard of before. Anyhow, it's a contest for barbershoppers. Mm-hmm. I guess you do the sound for them down in Iowa where there's regional or national competition, or maybe got the state wrong.
They move the fall competition has moved around the 5-state area, and so, which is, you know, South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, but that's only 4. But believe it or not, there's quartets that come down from Canada and choruses that come down from Canada sometimes. So, and I've done those competitions for close to 30 years, 2 of them a year. There's a smaller one in the spring. And then the regional competitions in the fall, and then the scoring and all of that produces the people that go to international, which is the huge competition.
Is there well attended on the levels that you've worked?
Yeah, it's been pretty solid. I would say it's gone down a little bit size wise, although there's been a resurgence, and the groups I'm seeing. That are coming out really strong on the quartet competitions and stuff. You see a lot of music majors and music directors and musical teachers and stuff. I see some pretty impressive singing by these music people, and there's definitely younger groups coming out that are very into it. They've changed some of the rules on how it's all mic'd and all. There's very specific rules on the mic'ing, the monitor placements, all this stuff. The interesting part is once these competitions start, I have to just walk away because you can't change anything. It's set up.
It's equal for everybody.
Or it's equal for everybody. And what they'll do is they'll have a quartet come out that's basically the tester quartet, and the judges will walk the room, set the volumes, set everything, and then that's what it is.
What about height? I mean, if you got short guys and tall guys.
Well, that's part of it. The microphones I use kind of don't. The microphones I'm using and the way they're set up, that's not as big of an issue because they're very, very
blended
and very even pickup in many directions.
Okay, omni, you call it?
Omnidirectional.
Yeah. For the benefit of the audience, you do have speakers and four mics, but for them to hear, the judges had to be isolated up front.
Well, that's part of it is the judges can only hear the live sound or the acoustic sound coming off the stage. So the sound system, unlike when you normally try to set up a sound system to cover all the audience, the trick that is to cover behind the judges' back, just to add some volume back there. And it's not a lot of volume, and it's not a huge addition. But because of the size of a lot of these rooms we're in, if you didn't add some amplification to the quartet in the back of the room, you wouldn't even hear them. You know, even though they're acoustically pretty nice rooms.
Well, what about somebody that wants a copy of that? Are you also recording it?
Well, because of copyrights, we record it, but it's for the competitors only. Yeah, nobody can get a copy of it because it's all copyrighted material. They have very strict rules on that. And so the performers are given a copy of their performance so that they can look at it, both an audio copy and a video copy.
And are you doing both those?
Yep. Yeah, we produce both those.
So that's all part of the package you're buying.
Yep.
You're not getting extra from each person in the barbershop quartet.
Right. Yeah, they register and pay the registration fees, and then they can buy the audio video package. Yep.
Do you ever come out with a favorite?
Well, I've done it for so many years that when I watch the shows, I almost can pick 1, 2, and 3 now. Pretty close.
Yeah.
Because you can tell when they're right on the money. And I mean, don't get me wrong, even the worst performers at these things are right on the money. Because there's no such thing as worst on them. But you get pretty soon, you find the ones that really just chord wise and lyrics and pronunciation and performance wise, they're judged on a lot of things. They're judged on the singing, the tune, the tonal quality, the tuning of their quartet and the chords, and they're judged on their, you know, how they interact with the audience while they're singing. So it's the whole performance is judged, and you know, because there's judges for each piece of there's a different judge for each thing that they're working. One person will judge the musicality. One will judge the actual, you know, chords and tuning. One judges the performance. You know, the judges for different parts of this. And then those scores are totaled, and that's how they're determined what position they're in. Usually there's 20 to 25 to 28 quartets on Friday night, and then the final 10 or the top 10 perform Saturday night to pick out the three.
Now, what is the most popular barbershop song?
Oh, I don't even know. I wish I could tell you that.
I think of Sweet Adeline.
You know, that song gets sung, but you'd be surprised with it. You know, there's probably 6 or 8 very popular songs.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, I actually couldn't even tell you because I don't even.
You never thought of it.
Never thought of that.
You know, it'll come back. Now, do you read music?
I do read some music at somewhat. Yep.
So you can appreciate what the judges are doing when they're selecting people. That's why you can pick 1, 2, and 3.
Almost. Right. Oh, yeah. Yep.
All right. It's 18 minutes before 10 o'clock, and my guest this morning is a fellow named Roger Fetty from
Fetty Electronics, and that, which is Faribault, and then also the production company is Fetty Productions.
Fetty Productions, spelt with an F. He's looking at his iPhone. Somebody telling you what to do? Or where?
Yeah, they're always messaging me. I just hit ignore.
What's the busiest time of the year for a person in your business?
Well, I think it used to be spring and fall and then a segment in the summer, but it's really now all the time. I think December is the only month that's slowed down. I have events in December, but it's just a few.
Yeah. Do you ever do anything as big as St. Olaf Choir?
No, I don't. However, excuse me. However, St. Olaf Choir, I actually years ago helped install the system that's in there. The company that I helped put in a lot of that equipment. Now maybe that's even changed since then because that stuff changes so fast.
Yeah. What's the biggest sound you ever set up? I know you do blocks here in Northfield, but what's the biggest auditorium or biggest college gymnasium? Show house.
I my larger systems, we cover the convention center ballrooms, the big ones, the big domes. We've covered stuff in there. We've done arenas in Rochester. I've done stuff out in Rochester, New York. I've been out into San Diego. I've got equipment that covers the really large rooms. my market tends to be more a specialty market where, you know, I do one-off shows.
Do what?
Like one-off shows. I don't do touring where I'm doing 10 shows in a row with the same group. Every show I do is different. And so that's a little different market in the fact that you have to be very flexible, because every show you do is different.
Now, do you have a calendar that shows you booked 6 months, a year ahead?
I'm booked about 2 to 3 years ahead.
2 to 3 years?
Yeah, people send the dates down. And
Would Defeated Jesse James days be one of those?
I'm told that I'm never allowed to retire, actually, on that one.
Yeah?
So they apparently I'm booked till I'm 6 feet under.
Okay.
So,
you know, that's a good point to go to right now is to talk about that. And what sound are you, and by the way, folks, this is part of an expense that we have, and I say we, I'm on the committee.
Yeah.
And I know Sandy, is she still the contact person for you?
Yeah, not as, I think she kind of retired a little bit.
Okay. But anyhow, a lot of people listening don't know how much sound you provide for Defeated Jesse James Days. What night do you start? Defeated Jesse James Day starts at noon on a Wednesday.
Yep.
Then we have the Joseph Lee Haywood Banquet on Wednesday night. And then Thursday, everything opens up downtown and at the rodeo site. So in detail, let's start with the first event. Would that be the ceremony at the Northfield Cemetery?
Right, correct. Basically, Jesse James Days.
Defeat
of Jesse James Days. I'll get that right. So basically that starts, it actually starts the week before for me because of the uniqueness of that event. There's stuff all over, all over. So we start the week before and actually preload some trailers with the equipment to match what we're doing. I've built some custom equipment for it. We bring in a fairly large lift to set up both the downtown and the rodeo site and stuff like that. So that has to all get planned and set up and ready to go. We usually try to have that ready to go by Monday or Tuesday, which is Labor Day. So then starting Wednesday, the big kickoff is we go do the graveside service, which is a very small system, but it's still got to be there. Then we go set up the Haywood Banquet.
Now, on the Haywood Banquet, I remember when Bernie Hughes built that place and the
yep.
sound system that he put in there, which was expensive, but it was also confusing. Do you use any of their own sound, or do you just set up totally independent?
So the interesting thing on that space is when he built that, that was one of the spaces that I mixed a lot of groups in back in the early 80s when that place opened. And the system that was in there at the very beginning when he opened it, that's not even there anymore.
Okay.
And there's a very small system in there now that they use, but generally I just bring in all independent equipment and set it up just because it's easier, and the needs are a little bit different and a little bit more than what the in-house system can handle. So we pretty much just bring everything in, set it up, go through the whole program with you guys and do that event and then take it down.
One of the things that it really seems like it happens every time is when something doesn't work and you got everything, you know, whether you're doing a slideshow or what do they call it, a PowerPoint, audio, video, whatever, it seems like something goes wrong. Like it's just part of the, not you, I'm saying just.
Well, that's, but that's, I'm usually
places
there.
Places I've been and done.
Yeah. And normally like even leaving at the Haywood banquet, the PowerPoint they bring in, they have trouble with. Well, I just go over and fix it for them and tell them, here's how you got to make it do it, and it works. That's why they have got people like me around, the backup tech.
Okay.
I think even out at the Haywood banquet, that's part of the reason they like me out there is just because if something does happen, usually it doesn't. I tend to really make sure my gear is always working and cables are working.
So we're using your gear?
Yep.
During the
Hayward banquet, yep.
Okay, all right.
And the projector and the screen and everything, yep.
Yeah. We don't have that every year, but
some years you do. And some years you've had a little, you know, well, Craig Watson's even performed there before the event once in a while. Years ago, they did a little bit of music for the walk-in and social hour.
Yeah, of course, now is a day of wireless mics. Is that a blessing, or do you like the hardwired?
Well, wireless mics, in the old days, I liked hardwired because wireless mics 20 years ago were not as dependable as they are now. But wireless mics now are, you know, pretty solid. You just don't have problems with them. The recent changes have been pretty expensive for me because of the FCC rulings. But
what does that mean?
Well, the FCC a few years ago sold off 600 meg to private industries. And so I had a massive inventory of 600 meg microphones that were rentals that I've been renting out for years, and they're good quality mics. Come February, March, or May, I don't know, this next spring is the last time you can use them legally. So I've been replacing those with, you know, 500 meg or 400 meg wideband type stuff. We're pretty sure that probably about 7 years ago they sold off 700 meg. And 700 meg, I only had a few things that got hit on that. So, but this last go round was pretty expensive.
Okay, now for those of us that don't understand what you're talking about, is that a wireless mic is means it's not hardwired,
right,
and that there's a radio signal emanating from the microphone.
Correct.
to the receiver, and then it's broadcast over the speakers.
Right.
And that's generally hardwired, isn't it, from the mixer
to the
speakers?
The receiver is plugged into the mixer, and then you do the mix and send it out to the speakers, and that's all generally hardwired.
Okay. So when you say the FCC sold it out to a private organization or private companies, what exactly does that mean?
Well, the 600 meg frequency bandwidth was sold off to a conglomeration of private industry. And so what happened was you can't operate your microphones on those frequencies anymore. And the microphones are set to operate, you know, 623 to 687. You can change the frequency within that range.
Yeah.
They can't reprogram them or anything. So you have to throw those out.
So is that a situation where corporate America is hurting the little man?
I think that the situation is that the FCC needed to reallocate and redivide and get all these frequencies organized in a better situation I mean, there's only X amount of frequencies available that you can't change physics. And so it was an evolution that happened. I think that I want to go as far as it, you know, big money talks. And
I know.
So somebody in the federal government decided this, the FCC, it'd be a good idea to sell these frequencies, and they did. They sold them the first time, the 700 meg band stuff they sold, and then they sold the 600. And I'm hoping that they've settled down and going to leave things alone for a while. And part of the last, and I'm not sure that if it was technically lawsuits, but all the companies said, you know, if you're going to do this, you need to do it, but we need to stay the same for a while. And so hopefully that's all settled down and we'll stay solid for 10 or 20 years.
Okay, now we're 1080 on the AM dial, 95.1 on the FM dial, so people understand that you dial in the frequency. So now when you go into the 600s, what was the people that petitioned to have it sold off? You have lived in a lifetime where the FCC started selling signals. I mean, before you had to apply, and you had to pass with flying colors that you would serve the community.
Right.
And now they sell them. Simple as that, you know?
Yep.
And so the rich get richer. But anyhow, so what would if it's a 600, what's the range of something like that? How many watts can you throw behind that?
Well, see, that's the thing with the consumer wireless microphones. You're limited to very low milliwatts.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not allowed very much. And even the new stuff is not allowed very much milliwatts.
Right.
And because of the way the FCC rulings are going and it's unlicensed wireless, you cannot interfere with anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to accept all interference.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a harmonic of a police radio come up, and a radio gets keyed and wipes out the wireless mic that you're using, that's the way it is. So the power that the wireless mics are transmitting are very small. It's 1.5 to 2.5 milliwatts.
Yeah.
The new microphones, some of the things they've done is they've changed it from they've used that frequency as a carrier wave rather than FM modulated, AM modulated, and stuff like that, which the old ones used to be truly, you know, you could get FM modulated wireless microphones. And the same thing, you could also get AM modulated wireless microphones. However, they would get almost any noise would shut those down. Any kind of radio interference would shut those down if it was close to the frequencies or anything. What they're doing now is they're actually transmitting that as a carrier and sending a digital data signal. And then that data signal is a lot stabler. It's a solid signal. It's not modulating like AM or FM within the signal of that carrier. So the wireless have improved quite a bit.
You understand all this, folks?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to me, and I don't really know that much. I do know enough to make me dangerous, as they say. But I started an FM radio station in the guest bedroom of my home.
Right.
And I put together a frequency and a signal, and I put a sign out in the front yard, tuned to 90.1 or whatever frequency I found to be the best, and then I broadcast Christmas music, and people would then be able to turn on their FM radio in their car.
Oh, sure.
And tune into the neighborhood radio stations.
Yep.
Then I got the name of all the kids, and then I played the voice of Santa Claus and talked to the kids. Billy, I know you want a red wagon, blah,
right,
blah, blah, blah. And then Christmas morning, I got word from parents on what the kids got, and they'd stop their car and, "Hey, Billy, were you happy with Santa's new flashlight?" You know, whatever.
Right, right.
And the kids were just in awe. They're like, "Wow, man, Santa Claus is talking to us."
Mm-hmm.
It was. I wish I had the energy to do it some more. But anyhow, that's a frequency use that was low power and available.
Yeah, the low power radio and stuff was, that's not been, been out for a while where you were allowed to do low power transmissions and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, TV stations do it, and I had a buddy that owned stations up in northern Minnesota, mm-hmm. and he would get what they call repeaters.
Oh, sure.
And because of the rugged area, he could broadcast from Duluth and have it picked up on the range somewhere
right.
and then redistributed
right.
through a different frequency. And that I always was jealous of him being able to do that. But
mm-hmm.
sitting here snuggled in the Twin Cities, I worked hard on getting an FM signal, spent a lot of money on it, and fortunately, Jeff, the FCC made new rules, and Jeff was able to take advantage of them. So now
yep.
we got a nice clear signal in downtown Northfield
yep.
on our FM. I've helped put together what we call a 200,000 watts ERP.
Yep.
Tell me what that is.
That's a lot of wattage.
Yeah. But we had bumper stickers like that in Tomah, Wisconsin. And what we had was a 100,000 watt FM,
mm-hmm.
but it was vertical and horizontal.
Oh, sure.
So we said 200,000 watts ERP, effective radiated power.
Right.
And the FCC made us get rid of those bumper stickers.
That's funny.
And, of course, the Mexican stations, they came up with some pretty big ones. Hey, we got to take a break. We'll be back. Our guest is Roger Petty. We'll be back in a flash.
Hi, I'm Angie Taylor, Director of Life Enrichment at Three Links Care Center in Northfield. We offer daily activities at each of our facilities, including independent senior living, assisted living, care center, and memory care. The activities range from exercise classes to sing-alongs, games to gardening, from bus rides in the countryside to painting fine art. Activities are personalized for the individual. Please call Three Links at 664-8800 or find out more at threelinks.org.
Hi, welcome to this Subway ad for footlongs starting at $4.99. How do you want it?
Yeah, I'll take a blast of death metal, please.
You got it.
Now Subway, full of black forest ham, spicy Italian, cold cup couple, with a marinara or veggie delight, starting at $4.99 each.
Limited time at participating shops. Prices vary and are higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Extras additional plus tax. No additional discounts. Coupons applied.
Your home, auto, and life are important to you. That's why the Northfield Insurance Agency works hard to provide you with the right protection. Kevin and Stan offer the products you need with the premier service you deserve. They carry business, auto, farm, homeowners, commercial, and bonds. Northfield Insurance is your independent agent, and they're connected with many insurance companies providing you with the lowest possible rates. That's the Northfield Insurance Agency.
Well, good morning, everybody. How you doing? How you feeling? How's it going? And all of those things. And it is KYMN 1080 AM you're listening to. And, of course, we are 95.1 FM.
Many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Hey, thank you for sticking with me here on KYMN Radio. Roger Petty is my guest this morning, and a lot of this stuff is really interesting to me and learning about these things. Roger is a privately owned president of a corporation called Petty Productions, and I asked him to come in and chit-chat about some of the things he did while he was out on the road. And when you're out on the road with the children, which is the name of a group, and going up to Albany with hitchhikers and all that, what other stories on the road do you recall?
Well, I mean, I've done so many different shows. Probably a more recent story that I always love to tell about is the San Diego show that I did. I won't say what the company was for. I was actually subcontracting with another company, but I'm sure I can say what the band was.
Sure.
But they had contracted me to go out as sort of a systems engineer and send my large PA out and a lot of equipment out. And a couple of semis went out there, and then I flew out. And The uniqueness of the show was we were loading it up into the hangar of the USS Midway, the aircraft carrier.
Cool.
Which is a museum out there now, which is a phenomenal thing to go visit. I realize that is even kind of that unit. You know, it's a big ship, but it's small compared to even the new supercarriers, obviously. But it's still just massive.
Is that where the Queen Elizabeth is, or whatever it's called? That
no.
big passenger.
Well, I think that isn't that in New York? No, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it is.
Okay, but you were on a...
We were on the USS Midway, the aircraft carrier.
Yep.
And so, of course, the unique things of that is because that thing is so big, they had these giant forklifts that could lift equipment up onto it. So we had to load in at like 3 a.m. in the morning when the ship was at low tide. And so we loaded in, set everything up. The way the schedule was, there was the whole week, but this was literally for a two-hour show on like a Thursday night. We were there Monday at 3 a.m. loading this in. We loaded it, did some more stuff the next day. We had a down day where we didn't have to do too much. And then on Thursday, the band was supposed to come load in at 3 a.m. or 3:30, whenever low tide was. Well, the band decided that was wrong, and they weren't going to come that early. They wanted to come at 10 o'clock in the morning, so they show up 5-6 hours late. Well, guess what's happened?
I don't know.
You haven't figured it out yet? The ship went way up in the air. It went to high tide.
Okay.
Forklifts wouldn't reach it anymore.
Okay.
But you have to get this, you know, they didn't have a semi, I don't, well, maybe they did. But you have to get all their equipment up to that ship, too. So there was a lot of feuding going on about the fact that they couldn't reach it with those forklifts, and so they had to use this crane. Well, this crane was set up in what was called civilian service mode. So it ran really slow. And so we finally got those guys up there, but they were so unhappy that they had to wait, you know, to get their stuff on. And basically God said, well, that's why we told you to be here at 3 a.m.,
And who was it?
We get everything set up. Okay. They get up there, and the show went great and everything. I was backstage. The other thing that we ran into is there was a lot of the planes are donated as museum pieces, but they are, and they'd only move them if the owner of the plane says, yes, you can move it, or if the owner is there to move it. Because some of these planes, I'm sure, are priceless on that thing. And... So one plane wasn't moved and apparently wasn't going to be allowed to be moved. And so we had to literally build the set in front of that plane. And then we finally figured out, let's incorporate the plane as part of the set. And so we actually lit it up with lighting, and it was a pretty cool show. But the band, which they've got a bunch of big hits, and I think the guy's famous, I don't know. Maroon 5, Adam Levine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I heard he's pretty famous.
Yeah, yeah, okay. He's being a little cute here.
Yeah, so, but anyway, so they performed, and it was a pretty interesting show. You know, it was a private function for a group out of Minneapolis, and, you know, it was, but that was probably a very new, one of the more unique setups I've done. And we were on time with low tide, so we were... up, our gear was up on there with those forklifts in 20 minutes. And
but did Adam Levine seems like such a nice guy?
Well, he wasn't there. It was his crew that was there.
Oh. do you prefer crew or roadie?
I call them crew. If they're with the band, they're crew. If they're hired help, they're kind of called roadies. I don't know if there's really one or the other. I usually just call them all the crew, stage crew,
house
crew.
I have been under the impression that roadies were big fans of the band or an individual in the band.
I think that's
groupies.
And
they do it for free.
No, that's it doesn't go that way.
Oh.
The crazy fans are usually called groupies. Well, if they're female, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
And, well, I don't even know.
Or
if
male if it's
male
a
if, groupie. Yeah, I don't even know. I actually don't even
groupies,
know.
Groupies, I heard that, yeah.
But mostly I call them crew or roadies.
Okay.
You know? I think crew is probably more common.
Okay. So when it comes to lighting, is that an expertise that your company also does?
We provide, you know, generally we'll hire somebody that's a lighting designer, but we'll provide all the technical and the equipment and the lights and the support behind it.
Have you ever heard of a guy named Jim Koontz?
Jim Koontz. It sounds very familiar, but...
Well, he worked for or owned a company up in St. Paul that was a lighting company.
Okay.
For staging and all that. Just wondered.
Okay. There's a lot of people doing this business.
What's easier, sound or lighting?
Well, I think that that's a good question. I would say that from an aspect of the audience, and I'm going to go a little satirical here, saying there's less experts on lighting in an audience than there are sound experts in an audience. And so probably lighting is a little easier because you don't have all the experts there. So,
why don't you explain what that means in some incidents that you've had?
You almost get them almost every show. There's always somebody that comes up and says something you're doing is completely wrong because everybody's a sound expert. And so what happens is you can do a show and you know, there'll be one person that says it's too loud, or one person says there's too much low end, or one person that says, well, you know, the guitar should have been a lot louder, or one person that says...
As
an audience member.
Okay.
Yeah, they're critiquing your mix.
And you're right out there in the open.
And you're out there in the open. Yeah. And another thing that happens, and which is really funny, is like sometimes there'll be an opening band, you know, for a group. We do a lot of shows where there's like a headline, big famous band has their own techs. And so we just make sure everything works for them. They sound check and they're good to go. The opening bands usually are not allowed sound checks or barely allowed sound checks, and they'll start performing. And so a lot of times they won't have techs with them. So then I'll have to cover that position out front of house. And what's always funny is, especially if they're young groups, the first thing that happens is they'll start playing their set, and maybe they didn't get to sound check or whatever reason. So really, I'm kind of adjusting sound on their first song just to kind of get everything dialed in. And it's happened many times, which is just hilarious. But the mother of the guitar player, because maybe it's a young group, comes up and starts yelling at me that the guitar isn't loud enough, and I always go, okay, but you know, and that'll happen 10 seconds into their first song. Well, we're just kind of getting everything dialed in because they weren't allowed a sound check or something, and that happens quite regularly. It's pretty funny.
So we got you at the graveyard at noon on Wednesday of Defeated Jesse James days. Then we have you at the Joseph Lee Haywood banquet.
Yep.
Now, do you put in fresh batteries in those microphones before every performance?
Generally. There's meters on them that tell us if the batteries are good or bad. If we know it's a two-hour or three-hour event, we always just put new batteries in.
And what do you do with the old ones?
Well, believe it or not, the old ones still work, and so I use them in my test equipment until they're completely dead. And then, yeah.
So for those of you who have not been to the Haywood banquet, generally you have a wireless on a rise in front of the stage, and then you have a wireless on top of the stage.
Up on the podium,
Up on the podium.
Yep.
And that seems to be working.
Yep, it works great. There's no wires in the way. They can move them around. You can hand them down the head table there for if somebody does want to say something.
Mm-hmm.
You can, when you have the royalty come on stage, the young ones can be handed a mic because they're really short.
Yep.
Because they couldn't even get up to the podium and stuff like that. So it works out quite well. So then when we go into Thursday, this last year was a little unique because Thursday, because of that early week rain and possibility of flooding and stuff, we kind of held off a lot on Thursday. But we ended up doing some work on Thursday. And then Friday we set, you know, we did set up, you know, because Thursday night's the entertainment center.
Okay.
You know, so we go set that up. That's on solid ground. The rodeo was pretty squishy, pretty wet. They had just finished the new bleachers. they've still, you know, it was kind of a whole new arrangement out there with the, you know, with the bleachers and then with the new bleachers and then the portable bleachers and everything, how it laid out. It turned out great this year. I'm hoping they leave it exactly the same. That'll be my advice to the defeat of Jesse James rodeo people.
How many speakers do you use at the rodeo?
We put up, actually, it's only six speakers, but it's actually the very large concert speakers. Because they tend to project quite a ways, and they're a full range speaker. So because the rodeo people coming in want, I guess I call it a rock and roll system. They want it to, they play their music tracks and all their specialty tracks and their promo track stuff. They want it to kind of, they want it to be pretty rocky.
Do they have their own playback equipment?
They bring all, yeah. I provide all the equipment up to where they have their little mixer playback equipment, their wireless and all that. Most of the rodeo clowns actually bring their own wireless headsets and all that stuff. So that all plugs into their equipment, and then that feeds what I put in.
And they're all in the same hertz?
I have no idea what frequency they're using.
Okay. But it's got to go into your mixer, doesn't it?
It's got to go into the mixer, yeah. So they have receivers that plug into the mixers.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, now I've been there where I've been right next to the speaker.
Yep.
A little loud.
Yeah.
But I've been at the other end, too, or outside of the rodeo grounds, and it sounds wonderful.
Yeah. Like I said, this year, the positioning of those speakers is the most critical thing down there, and the way we'd done it for quite a few years, just because it was the only way we could really do it, was the far end of the bleachers tended to be a little bit loud because they were a little too close to the speakers. There's not a lot you can do about that until you start changing layouts. Now, the last couple of years, especially this year, the layout worked out in a way that there was no really loud areas.
On the north end and stuff.
Yeah. Everything was covered. Yeah. That new west bleachers we had covered really well, and we were shooting right across the grounds, so we had some distance there, which allowed it to even out very nice. Yeah. So I didn't get any calls, so I think it was really good. And I asked them, and it said it was really good. So,
you know, one of the things that helps sales is if you drive by on a motorcycle or a convertible or the windows down, while a performance is going on, let's say Friday night, and the sound is like they're standing right next to you telling you that the cowboy is coming out of the chute.
Yep.
And it's kind of exciting to be able to feel that just going by with the windows down.
Well, it's a pretty large area to cover. And when they fill the place up, it's you cover that whole grounds. It's a pretty large area. And, so we set that up. We set up the entertainment center. We're dealing with the entertainment center with groups on Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night. Friday and Saturday, usually there's two groups. And so we provide all the lighting and sound and stuff in there. And we also provide, a lot of the groups don't have sound people, so we have to provide a tech for them.
Okay, let's start with Thursday. And it's townie night.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, a band that's not as maybe as loud as Saturday night.
Right.
Okay. So the people are hired to perform, and then they come in and plug into your stuff?
Well, they'll bring their guitar amp, and we'll put a microphone in front of it. They'll bring their drums and set up their drums. We'll put mics on the drums. We'll set up the vocal mics, however many singers they have, we set up those. We generally mix the monitors on stage that they hear, which is separate from the front of house or the main sound. So they pretty much kind of bring their guitar amps and drums and keyboards and stuff, and then we plug all of that into our system and then mix that into the PA. So that's pretty general from almost all of the bands that go in there. Sometimes the bands will bring their own sound guys, sometimes they won't. And so, the person I have there or people I have there generally will be an audio engineer that can mix it for them.
So they don't have to carry all that stuff?
No, they don't carry all the PAs and all that.
I wonder if that's a benefit that would lower the cost of the band. If you could say, hey, now, wait a minute, we got the sound, all you do is plug into us. So that
I think I stay out of that side of it. I think, well, a trend in the market is most bands don't carry PAs anymore. Not very many do. Not to the level of 25 years ago where if you had a band, you carried a PA. You know, so it allows them to book a lot more groups. And I would imagine they get pricing based upon all that stuff provided. Some bands, I don't, you know, I guess I don't know how they, that's not really what I do.
Well, so. but some of the, like, I'm trying to remember the goofy name of a very popular group that played at Steel County Fair.
And Hairball.
I mean, they're very expensive.
Oh, they're super expensive.
Yeah, and...
And they carry all their own production and everything.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. So when you hire them, you wouldn't be involved if we had them at Saturday night at the... I mean, you could...
Well, probably not, except for I don't know if they'd even fit in there. They would take up half the tent.
Yeah, that's true. they are amazing.
Yeah, they do a great job.
I know
most of those guys, actually.
No, I've never seen them.
Yeah.
And I just, by way of hearing them, the first time I heard about them was at the Steel County Fair, and somebody said Hairball. And I'm going, what a name. Of course, they said that when the Beatles came out.
Right.
But how big of a group are they?
Well, they're a multi-tribute group. They're not. It's not that they're huge. I think they're only five or six piece. Maybe seven if they got a couple of different lead singers. But you know, they have the basic band. But what their theme is between sets they change to different genres of you know, styles of music, and they come out and do, you know, tributes to all different, you know, 80s hair band. It's a lot of 80s hair band tribute stuff, and they all come out with wigs on, and they dress the part of different superstars of that period. And
do they do Kiss last?
I guess I think so.
Because he paint
all the makeup and everything. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, they're pretty interesting group.
And is it the what is the big band that most of the people are from Northfield? CCCB or whatever?
Oh, Casablanca Orchestra, CBO,
yeah.
Mel.
Yeah, they used to put on a great show.
Great show.
And they've done some for us that I'm sure didn't charge us as much as they did somebody else because there's no traveling for
most. And they're actually still out there performing.
Yeah. I've heard that somebody hired them to do a wedding in Chicago.
They've reinvented themselves a little bit, and they're doing a lot of, you know, real bigger multi-part type stuff. And I'm trying to think what I mean. They just do so much stuff, you know. And Mel's super talented at putting it together, so they just always do a great job.
We're talking about CBO. They've been around for quite a while.
Yeah, believe it or not, a long time ago, this is one of those unique gigs. It was about 1990, 91, maybe 92, somewhere in there, a guy come to Faribault and opened up the Depot, the restaurant there.
Yeah.
And we used to put we brought CBO into that restaurant a number of times. Yep. We'd set up a stage in the lower thing up high, set them up, put a PA in there.
Oh, for gosh sakes.
Early 90s. So that we were the ones that brought CBO to Faribault at that time. It was pretty interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me about continuing with Defeated Jesse James Days. So then on Friday, do you do two bands?
We do two bands. They set up the one, soundcheck them, set up the other one, soundcheck them, and then they perform, you know, from 7 to... 1 in the morning or whatever.
Yeah, is it your employee that's running the board?
Yeah, generally.
Okay.
It's tended to be more and more of that. I mean, there's just, you know, a lot of the bands they're booking. It just depends on which ones they book.
So is there a better deal for the bands if you provide all that for them and they don't have to? Or don't you get involved in that?
I kind of stay. I would assume that they get a better deal, but I don't know I stay out of that. I'm the behind the curtain guy, sound guy.
Now, Mr. Behind the Curtain Sound Guy, what is your favorite band over the years that you like to set up?
Well, that's a pretty hard one because I have a lot of favorite music and I pretty wide genre. Some of the events that stick out to me that I actually got to mix, which was really cool, is I got to work with and mix Arlo Guthrie in Rochester.
Wow.
And I was always a huge fan of Alice's Restaurant, the album.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, the 35-minute song.
Yeah.
You know, that radio station's good to play. And I don't know if anybody does that anymore, but back in the day, I think there were some radio stations that would play that nonstop, like on Thanksgiving Day. You know, they'd play Alice's Restaurant, you know, that song. But it wasn't a very advertiser-friendly song because it was 35 minutes long.
Yeah. I like to play Meatloaf.
Yep.
And he's got an 8-minute song that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then, of course, American Pie.
American Pie. Well, Paradise Lights would be the 8-minute song. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So have you done any setup in La Crosse?
There's a couple of events we've done in La Crosse. One of the events has been the Barbershop Regionals, has happened there a number of times. And every year we're doing one of the robotics event down there at the La Crosse Center. So, yeah.
Is it called the Mary E. Sawyer Auditorium?
I don't think so. I don't remember.
Okay, that's what it was when I was
working. Oh, it might be.
Near Rochester or La Crosse. We'll get back here on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN out of Northfield, Minnesota in just a moment.
It all started with a mouse.
Hiya, folks!
But now it's the biggest celebration on ice. Disney on Ice celebrates 100 years of magic. Everything you love about Disney. 14 classic tales, over 30 songs, and more than 50 unforgettable characters, including Anna, Elsa, and Olaf from Disney's Frozen, all in one spectacular ice show.
Tickets on sale now. Coming to Xcel Energy Center December 6th through 9th. For tickets and show details, visit DisneyOnIce.com.
Hi, I'm Kathy Olson. Navigating the unfamiliar land of senior care can be daunting. We're here for you. Millstrom Commons offers the care and services you need and the independence you want. Renting one of our assisted living apartments provides you with 3 meals a day, served restaurant style in our dining room, weekly housekeeping, and the option of adding personal supportive services as you need them. Our staff's on duty 24/7 to provide that much needed peace of mind. If you're searching for options, give me a call. I'm here for you.
Good morning. It's 25 minutes after 10 o'clock on a Monday morning. This is November the 19th, Thanksgiving Day coming up. And do you do anything on holidays, Roger Fetty Productions?
I try to take most holidays off. However, like Thanksgiving's coming up, and I help with the Irish turkey trot Thanksgiving morning over in Faribault.
In Faribault. We have one here in Northfield.
Yep.
Are they similar in size?
I guess I don't know. I know that there's close to 1,500 signed up for that Faribault one.
Wow. I can't believe that. And then you set up sound for that?
We set up sound it's out at the middle school. We set up a small sound system for announcing in the gym, and then we put a little tower sound for the announcement at the start line.
Okay.
And stuff. So this year looks like it'll be warm. Sometimes three years ago, it was, I think, minus 10.
Ooh.
Cables don't unfold very good or anything. Mm.
We're talking with Roger Fetty. Now, Friday night at the, what, do you go to Friday night and Saturday night? Do you go yourself? Do you go check it out?
Yeah, generally I go in and check and make sure everything's good. And then, you know, of course, Saturday night, we actually take the equipment out of there late Saturday night because it's a lot easier than during the chaos of Sunday and the parade and stuff to try to get it out of there. So we do a lot of late hours work also.
Do you ever worry about your equipment overnight on Thursday and Friday?
I sure hope not. We've never had a problem. I think that the local police department watches the area, and they're stationed right around the corner. And, you know, you really can't control any of that. I try to not worry about it, but you know.
Is there a bigger crowd on Friday night or Saturday night?
Well, it depends on the band. Although the last couple of years, I think the Saturday night crowd's definitely been the big one. Mm-hmm. I think Friday this year was a little bit soft, but then Saturday was huge.
What about the sound? Do you get any complaints from, you already mentioned the band, and then you mentioned the professional sound testers coming up, but yeah. do you get any complaints from anybody that's not associated, not there to dance and enjoy themselves, or just
walk? Yeah, there's always people that'll complain about it, but usually when you talk to them, if they'll talk to you, some of them just like to complain, but what they're complaining about, of course, is the tent. They think it's the sound, but it's actually the tent. The tent is very noisy. The tent is vinyl. It's probably, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say it's the worst environment, because I know that concrete gyms are worse. But it's because of the reflective surface of the vinyl. It's very tough to control the sound. You know, so almost any volume bounces down the tent and it gets very loud. A few years back, I suggested a few things, which really helped, I think, on the server side, is they spread that out as far as possible. They put the serving all the way down to the north end, band at the far end. I think that's really helped them, so that when they're serving, you know, beverages, that they don't have as, you know, trouble hearing the people talk. There's not a lot you can do about that. You can turn volume up or down. It depends a lot on the band. If the band has a guitar player with a large guitar rig that just cranks up, you know, I always tell them I'm putting them in the PA, but I actually just shut them off. So, oh, I think I just gave away a big secret there. I hope that those guys don't come after me.
No, they won't. No, they'll be up on stage.
Yeah, that's
listening
true.
Listening to the, what do you call it?
The very large guitar amp.
So, have you ever traveled from the spot your speakers are to see how far the sound travels and kind of get a kick out of it? Like, man, I could hear the band from Saturday night's Defeat of Jesse James Day's presentation in Lonsdale or something like that. I'm being a little silly. How far have you gone?
Usually I'm pretty much tied up working, trying to go see if I hear it too far away. But, you know, one thing I notice about the defeat of Jesse James Day's Entertainment Center is because of the way the buildings are downtown and stuff, I almost always can hear it over by, at least I can hear a little bit of the bass, and I always can hear a little bit of it bouncing over by the rodeo, because I'm always checking on the rodeo, too. So I think it bounces off those downtown buildings and kind of travels in that southwesterly direction.
Now, how do you go between the rodeo and the entertainment center when you have to stop at both of them in the same night? How do you do
that?
Well,
that's become an art. There's an art to sneaking around this town when this many people are in this town.
Okay.
So I kind of know my little spots. I can go to get somewhere quickly. I don't go on the main fares or the main thoroughfares. I will sneak the back road, go a side road.
In a truck or in a car?
Usually in a car.
Oh, in a car.
I figured out it's the fastest in a car.
Okay.
Because you got to find somewhere to park and stuff like that.
Do you set up sound for the Saturday auto show, car show?
We don't do the car show, no.
Okay.
But we do the soapbox derby now. That's grown quite a lot.
That
soapbox derby's doing really well.
And
it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I wish I could fit in one of those.
Well, you can build one for yourself.
Well, yeah.
Danny Hyatt got that thing off the ground, the late Danny Hyatt, a very good friend of mine. And I was shocked that he had an announcer on one corner, and he was announcing up to St. John's and down to the turn.
Yep. Yep.
And I thought, well, that really, everybody could hear him.
Was
that your setup?
Well, yeah, the first year or two that they did it, we just borrowed him a powered speaker. Well, it grew so fast that that immediately became not big enough. So the last couple of years, we've actually put kind of a little tower system in there that I use to cover large areas. And that's worked really well. We point some down the corner, down the curve, or the, where the corner is, towards the south, and then we point some up the street, and he announces from there, and they can hear it both directions now. Yeah. And probably the third year, there was just lots of complaints. We couldn't hear him, we couldn't hear him. And I was like, well, okay, we're going to have to up this a little bit. And so we did, and it's worked out quite well now. But it's awesome to see that up there growing like that.
Well, I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, those kids take that pretty serious.
I do a little bragging, which I'm not known for.
No.
Is that when the Morristown JCs put together what they called a soapbox derby, then Faribault did, and I thought, now Northfield could do that. And my idea was the winners, the top five from Morristown, the top five from Faribault, and the top five from Northfield would have a runoff for Rice County.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we learned we couldn't use, after the third year, I think, couldn't use Soapbox Derby anymore because their lawyers said it's a name that is...
Well, it's a trademarked name, actually.
And so, okay, we changed it to Raider. But for those people that don't know, I had to find a place on where to have a Soapbox Derby. Well, when I was a kid, they had the Nationals in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a straight-ahead downhill. And I was thinking, well, the St. Olaf Hill, you know, coming down St. Olaf Avenue, that'd be perfect. I thought, well, what if they had a turn?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, So I'm driving around town. I'm talking over on the east side as well. And I thought, St. John's, go down a block. Take a break. Go down a block. Take a left.
Yeah.
And they get up some pretty good speed.
Oh, yeah.
It's exciting. It really is fun. And they dress themselves up, and they dress up the Soapbox Derby. And I'm putting in a plug now, grandma and grandpas and moms and dads and aunts and uncles and neighbors, if you got a kid, work with them over this winter and build a Soapbox Derby. And you can get the rules and regulations, and wheels are all standard. You can get them at Napa here in Northfield.
Yeah.
So have you ever, in the years that you've been doing this, so we got you set up at the rodeo. We got you set up at the entertainment center. Bingo, you have nothing to do with bingo?
No.
Okay. And now let's go to... What would be next?
The most important one, the absolute most important one, Wayne, I'm surprised you missed that, the downtown sound. For the reenactment.
Oh, yeah.
You forgot about that one.
Well,
that's the most important one.
Okay.
The reenactment sound has been pretty interesting through the years. We used to mount some horns up on a couple of light poles and... It always worked. It was fine. But what's happened is I think that there's been that people going to events expect very high-end sound. So we've probably about, has this been the fourth or fifth, probably 5 years ago, four or five years ago, they approached me, well, what would you do if we wanted to improve this? And I said, well, here's how I do it. And so what we did is I actually... my ex-employee's husband actually manufactured to my specs some brackets that we set up on the roofs to hang these speakers. And then I bought these very nice, very small speakers. Part of the complaint was is the big horns were on those light poles, they'd get in photos all the time, and it didn't really look very good. You know, so there was some of that and stuff. So we did a fairly major change in that system, about 5 years ago and added these speakers hanging on these brackets, which improved the sound 1,000%. I mean, it sounded better. And the speakers are waterproof. They can be up there if it rains and stuff like that. And then just this last year, this last fall, I added one more speaker down at the far end because that end has gotten to be so packed. And this north end gets to be so packed, we actually set some speakers and some little brackets right on top of the info booth to cover that corner down there. And so we've improved that, and that sound is, we do everything wireless on it. We've got it hooked up now where we walk around with an iPad to set the levels. The little mixers, you hook to it with an iPad, and you can just walk around. So, and everything's actually hidden inside that little info booth. It's not a lot of equipment, but it's pretty high-tech. The new wireless I've got is what's called wideband wireless. The quality of it's phenomenal. And so we've really improved that sound. And so, and people don't realize, but there's 12 speakers hanging along that street. And you don't notice them because they're so small. They're way up on top of the buildings and just pointing down.
So that's why you rent a forklift or whatever you call it?
Well, my brother owns the forklift, so we use that to set up both the rodeo and the downtown, because we have to get up high with all that equipment, so it works out the best to, just to go up there with the cage and put the stuff up there that way.
Well, I didn't notice you had speakers on top of the information booth, and I'm surprised I didn't get any feedback.
Well, that's because I'm so good.
Yeah, but you aren't there. It's some other guy.
Well, I trained him well.
Okay. No, I guess I didn't pay attention to that. But
what was happening is I could kind of cover that area off of the corner of the building of the museum up there. But then that set of speakers would have to be a little bit louder, and then it would create some issues down in the street. So by doing what I did this year, I was able to actually have those speakers be a little turned down just a little bit, and then put the sound on the info booth to cover that firing. Because where the horses enter at, that area down there, it's packed to the walls down there. I mean, they're standing. And if you're behind the info booth or anything alongside the info booth, you really couldn't hear it really well. So I said, well, we got to improve this area because there's a huge amount of people down there.
Have you ever mic'd the raid itself?
Get
your guns, boys, or robbing the bank, and get off the streets.
We've thought about all that, but no, it's the get your guns guy could probably be mic'd up, but back when Tim's doing it now, but
Danny
Freeman was doing it, he had a headset and he would get out there. And they've changed that around. I don't know if it's for the better or worse. It's not my decision, but they've got some sections pre-recorded, which in a certain way works better. It's more consistent for every reenactment. And then Tim does the live portion, and they do the royalty introduction and some of that stuff, before each reenactment. So I think it's working out pretty well. You could technically, wire up a few more people on there and get that in there. But I think it's.
But we have a budget.
Well, you have a budget you have to stay in, too. So now, we try to keep the budgets very tight.
Here's the deal, then. Folks probably don't know this, but the parade starts at 2.
Yep.
However, you're doing the reenactments, and sometimes there's a little program where you mic somebody up, but then the parade comes down the street, and the way it goes now, you have two locations where you're
correct.
And has anyone ever thought of a third, or like on Woodley and Highway 3?
Or
246?
I would think that parade is so huge, you could have probably five locations. But they've always had the two. The one was called the old Lansing Corner location, which is not there anymore, but we're always right there.
Yeah. You got permission to get up on the building?
No.
We
go right on the street. And we used to put a little stage down there and stuff, but we figured out a way that the last 2, 3, 4 years, I figured out a way to, we just put them in the back of my pickup.
Yeah.
My pickup is the stage.
Yeah.
It works great.
Yeah.
In fact, then this last year, because that whole road was all tore up, it worked out fine because, it was tore up bad down there. Normally where we set up, there was some holes and there was barrels and there was all kinds of stuff. So I actually took my truck the other direction and then drove into the construction site on the and parked in there and backed in, and it worked out fine.
And of course, a lot of people don't know how much effort is being put into providing sound for spectators, and it's certainly important. Have you ever had anybody announce a parade on a motorcycle before?
No, I think it's just you.
So if you were talking to some other radio station about the whole thing, you'd say, well, I even had a guy that did the parade announcing off his motorcycle.
I'm not sure if I would get asked that question, but I guess I could say that that's happened.
Well, where's the weirdest place you had somebody broadcasting a parade? And what communities do and what dates are always tied over, tied up?
Well, we've done the Heritage Parade in Faribault for 30 plus years, and we do. I think we've done the defeat of Jesse James Daves for, I want to say 28, 29 years. There used to be a guy in town, Brent Day, that had Day Productions, and he was the one that had done it for a number of years. And then he hired a guy from Faribault that was a friend of mine. And then he actually bought out Brent Day, and then I bought him out. And that's sort of how that all happened. That's been 28 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so, most unique place to do it. I don't know. We've done some stuff in downtown Minneapolis with sound on the street where the announcer guy is actually up in the skyway announcing, stuff like that.
That's cool.
You know, so
nice and warm.
Well, yeah, they want to be warm, and you're down in the in some of the cold, some of those cold events. I think nothing too super crazy unique.
Okay, so you do Rice County Fair?
We've done stuff at Rice County Fair, depending on what's needed.
So you did Heritage Days for Faribault, Northfield's Defeat of.
Yep.
How about Morristown?
No, they have their own system down there, Morristown. Kenyon's Rose Parade, we don't do anything there. They do a cutter parade in the winter, too, that I don't know if I don't even know if they do any announcing in the winter, but...
So you don't... And you do high schools.
We do some high school graduations.
Yeah.
And we provide equipment. We do Northfield's high school graduation every year out at the football field.
What about weddings?
Not into weddings.
You're not a DJ?
No DJing. I have a great friend in Minneapolis that I immediately give the email to him if they ask me about weddings. I says, here's the professional DJ guy to call.
Who's that? That's somebody I know?
Probably not, but it's
okay.
I'll plug him. It's great friend of mine. I've known him for 30 years. We used to work on a lot of student groups together because they would hire him as a DJ and I'd bring in the production for the student conferences. So, but his name was Sean Plant, and the group, his wedding service or his DJ service is Instant Request. So he does a phenomenal amount of weddings a year. I can't even believe how he keeps it so organized.
Instant Request.
Yep.
Which was something that you couldn't do when I was doing that kind of a gig years and years ago. I'd have to go through my records.
Make sure,
to put it on a turntable start it up after the other turntable got done.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, oh boy, times have changed for everybody. 15 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. We are a friend you can count on, and we'll be wrapping up our conversation with Roger, ask him a few more questions about what's it like to be out on the road being a sound guy.
Get out of my room!
It's my room, too.
Why are you always in my business?
Are you always a dummy head?
Good one.
Mom, Lauren sarcastically complimented me.
Mom, Emily's on my side of the room. Mom, we can't share a room any longer.
Stop complaining. I have to share a room with your baby brother and your father.
Is your family in need of more space? Let Professional Pride Realty in Northfield help guide you through the process of selling your current house and finding the home that is right for your growing family. Professional Pride Realty, providing good information so you can make good decisions. Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Go to tell that Mary about Uncle John. He claimed he had the misery, but he having a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Woo, baby.
A little bit of Little Richard on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Yeah. And speaking about Richard, Roger, I would like to know, what was the wackiest, most fun, zaniest, craziest, worst, best bands that you have been the sound person for? Not necessarily the name of the bands perfectly, but where were you and what would you do? And it was kind of weird because crazy things happen at the many dances that you've been in, entertainment centers.
Yeah, they blend together a little bit. A lot of this stuff, especially earlier in the, you know, those 50s ballrooms and all that stuff, those got to be some pretty solid parties. You know, even the ones out at the Northwood ballrooms, you'd bring in the 50s band. It was, whether it was the Revels, the Wanderers, you know, there was just so many bands.
The White Walls or
the White Sidewalls, yeah. The Rockin' Hollywoods. I mean, you can keep going on and on and on. So. You know, in the early 90s, I worked with a lot of bands. There was, you know, like reggae, and there was a band out of all places, I believe it was Jackson, Minnesota, or Wilmer, Minnesota. No, somewhere down in 90 there by Sioux Falls, there was a band called Ipso Facto, huge reggae band out of the early 90s. And they would do colleges and downtown street parties and stuff. And I remember one time when they were doing the Uptown Art Fair in Minneapolis, we had set them up in the street, and the streets are all closed off for the art vendors, and at night they'd bring in music and stuff. And the craziest thing happened. So we do sound check. They start performing at, I think, either 7 or 8 o'clock. They do a set. They do another set. 10 o'clock, the power goes off.
On purpose?
Well, I don't think on purpose.
Okay.
So, of course, we're scrambling to figure out why the power's off. And come to find out that they had hooked the power up on top of the building somewhere into one of the air conditioning units for one of the businesses on the street. And the vendor had closed up shop at 10 o'clock and closed her doors and locked up and shut all her breakers off and left. So the show never started again. That's a crazy zany thing that happened.
Anybody suffer financially because of that?
Well, I never heard of any of that. I know that we did get paid. The band got paid. I would imagine that there was probably a lot of changes the next year, because the next year they actually brought in a rental generator. I suppose they were trying to save the cost of a generator.
How about, have you ever worked at any of the casinos?
Through the years, I've done some stuff. I've done stuff at, had worked with one company that years ago did many events out of Jackpot Junction. A few years ago, I put up a huge sound system up at Black Bear up by Duluth, and I was projecting the sound, and they actually video mapped the entire hotel, one side of the hotel, with a big video show, and, you know, talking a 14-story building, so the backside of that hotel, the whole thing was a video wall, so they mapped this thing, and we ran this big program a couple of times after dark. It was phenomenal. And
I remember first seeing video being projected on the side of buildings.
Yep.
And I'm going, holy cow, that's pretty cool. Is that difficult, or do you have to?
It takes a lot of time. Yeah. When they talk about mapping it, you're mapping the video to fit the building, to fit every window that's in the building, every crack that's on the building, every, you know, if the building changes structure as it comes down, you have to change that mapping. And so they, you know, like this particular show, they mapped that whole building and made the whole building turn into, you know, one big window. And then by the way the video is mapped and colored, windows that are actually in the building disappear. And, you know, then you can, you know, it's phenomenal with technology. Now, those, it takes huge projectors to do that.
Yeah.
In fact, the projectors were so heavy we had to use my lifting towers to lift the projectors up into the lifts, and so that they could lift the lifts up into the air to get in the right position. So it was a pretty interesting setup all day that day.
Now, there's a computer specialist that puts it together. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not doing it yourself.
No. Okay. No, I was strictly involved on the audio side.
Okay. So the life in a guy that graduated in 1977 from Faribault High School as a sound management individual. Productions. Fetty Productions. We'll be back with a wrap here on KYMN in just a moment on the Wayne Eddy Affair.
Are you looking for spacious senior living in Northfield? Feel at home at Northfield Retirement Communities, Northwood Pines. Available for individuals and couples, this assisted living combines the privacy of one-bedroom plus den apartments with family-style meals and care available around the clock. Visit us online at northfieldretirement.org or call us today at 664-3466. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
This holiday season, don't look any further than Eco Gardens in downtown Northfield when it's time to pick up your holiday decor, including custom wreaths, garland, and centerpieces. And don't forget the Christmas tree. Stop by and let Howie and Jenny help you pick out the perfect Christmas tree and the extra special touches to complete your home's transformation into that special holiday place to enjoy and share with others. Eco Gardens is locally owned and takes pride in providing the community with high-quality Christmas trees and holiday accessories. Stop in, warm up around the fire, and browse the large selection at Eco Gardens.
Hey, I know those people, Eco Gardens, right on 6th and Division Street. And Thanksgiving is coming up on Thursday. And, Roger, is there a tradition in your family in regards to Thanksgiving?
I think the tradition is, well, there's two traditions. The one tradition is our whole family gets together, and we eat way too much.
Well, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. My mom learned how to cook for eight kids, so she usually still makes too much food. The other tradition is trying to explain to people, and I actually just seen a meme on Facebook on this, and I shared it just recently, actually, in the last couple of days, but trying to explain to people how to eat pumpkin pie.
Now, there's a way?
Well, how to properly whip cream pumpkin pie. And I want to share this meme again. So if anybody knows me on Facebook, you can find it on my feed. But you take whipped cream and you completely cover the pie all the way around, so all you see is a pile of whipped cream. And if there's any pumpkin pie showing, it's not correct.
Okay.
So, and then once you have that, that's the proper way to eat pumpkin pie. And then you start biting off whipped cream with chunks of pie and eating it. So technically enough whipped cream that you can't see any of the pumpkin pie, including the crust side. You have to cover it all up. That's the proper way. Now, some people don't like it that way. I explained to myself, that's too bad, because that's the way to do it.
Now, is that because as the oldest of eight kids that you had to use a minimum amount of whipped cream on the pumpkin pie, like maybe a spoonful?
Well, it's possible that was the case. I think mostly it was I just liked pumpkin pie that way. So I always made sure to grab, you know, the container. And back in the, well, when I was really little, my mom would actually make the whipped cream.
Yeah. Mm.
And now it's all bucketed or spray can or whatever, you know. But it's actually easier to do it now with, the spray cans, because you can really cover it up fast. So that's the second tradition that I follow.
Are you going to mom and dad's for Thanksgiving?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My mom and dad still do a host of Thanksgiving, and it's a pretty full house. And
I guess so.
Yeah,
eight kids.
Yeah. Yep.
Got a lot of cousins, I would imagine. A lot of nieces
and nephews come. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Family and stuff. So, but
it is time to bid farewell, I believe.
Yep.
It's about 4 minutes before.
Was there something you wanted me to hear? I think it was the ballad. Is there a ballad? Or what am I supposed to listen to? I'm not sure if I'm leading into this right.
There's no lead-in.
There's no lead-in.
There was a discussion outside with Robert Bierman.
Oh, okay.
And Scott Richardson.
Okay.
And brought up was the fact that Scott Richardson wrote the words to the ballad of Wayne Eddy to the tune of Ghost Riders in the Sky. And
oh.
I had mentioned that's his dad. I had mentioned Craig Wozner.
Oh, Craig Wozner.
That's where that came in, and you and I talked about that during a break.
Yep.
And then you said, well, do you have it? And I said, yes, I know where it is in this computer. And then you said, are you going to play it?
Well, yeah, you have to play it.
So I'll do this just for you.
Okay, this is awesome.
Thank you for coming, and
happy
Thanksgiving.
I appreciate the conversation.
This is KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 AM for over 50 years, and 95.1 FM from downtown Northfield, Minnesota.
Statesman who appreciates his fate. He interviews the folks he knows and tells their tales with care, broadcasting on the AM dial. Wayne Eddy is still on the air. Yippee-yi-yay.
pretty amazing, Mr. Roger Fetty, that you